What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Lawyer You Know podcast. I'm your host, attorney Peter Tragos, and on this podcast, we break down the trials and cases you care most about so that you can understand how the American criminal and civil justice system works. We try to make sure you understand your rights by answering your questions as, well, a lawyer that you know. So we want to walk you through this process, and we can do it together. Make sure you get in the comments or in the chats to ask the questions that have been burning in your minds. And while this is not legal advice, it's always exciting. So buckle up for another episode of The Lawyer You Know. What's up, everybody? Happy Monday night. It's Lawyer You Know After Dark here. Back to the nightly recaps. It's been a little while since we've done these. We did them with Johnny Depp. We did them some with Ronnie O'Neill, with Daryl Brooks. Did them with some of these cases, and it seems to be a good format that fits into your schedule and fits into mine. You can watch the live stream on lots of different channels with commentary, without commentary, but come here every night after the trial. We're going to give you a recap. We're going to explain what's going on, why certain questions are being asked, why things are happening the way that they are, and of course, get your questions answered. I'll answer as many questions as possible at the end of the video. But today we are going to recap and discuss what happened during day one of jury selection and why this process is probably going to take longer than 2 days now that we have a little more information. Because there's a lot that we don't know about how South Carolina does this process. And it even seems like there are some different variations that can happen in South Carolina. And at the end of the episode today, after I do some Q&A on this case, I am going to have a special guest who happened to be called to jury duty today and went through her own experience in the jury selection process, and she didn't get picked, so she's able to come on and share her experience with us, and it's going to be really interesting to hear the differences from what she went through today in just a normal run-of-the-mill, your average person civil case versus a high profile with highly paid and trained lawyers in a criminal case with all eyes on you as the court, as the lawyers, as the judge. And it's very, very interesting to see the differences. And we'll talk about whether or not you think this is fair and whether or not this is how it should be and whether or not it's plausible that this could possibly happen in every case. But it's really interesting to discuss how it happened in this case versus how jury selection happens in other cases. We are talking about, okay, here's what I'm going to go with, by the way. Alec Murdoch. That's what I'm going to go with, okay? Because I've been given all sorts of different pronunciations from Murdaugh, which is what I usually say, to Alex, to Alec. But I listened closely, or as closely as I could today, to the judge talking about it. So we're going to go with Alec Murdoch as much as I can, because I'll probably screw that up as well. But we're talking about Alec Murdaugh's case and the deaths of his wife and son. And we are not yet talking about any of the financial crimes he's accused of and even been charged with, because he hasn't been convicted of them yet. And we still don't know if they're going to come in this trial as potential motive. So this is funny. Okay. Brandy, this case has taken forever. Actually, this is much faster than your average criminal case takes to get to trial in today's judicial system. And I agree with you. Everything is way too delayed. And that'll be a common theme for our special guest as well, who discusses her experience. So I see other people saying they were summoned for jury duty last week or today, which is very interesting. So you can compare that to what this jury selection process was. Now, we didn't know if there was going to be feeds inside the courtroom. I should say, hit the subscribe button if you're new on the Alec Murdoch case. And if you are, let me know in the comments if this is the case that brought you to the channel, because I always like to know that. And hit that like button if you do like the nightly recaps, explanations, and Q&As, which is our plan going forward for the next couple weeks, as many nights as we possibly can do, work and family permitting. So when we talked about this case, we didn't know if there was going to be a feed in the courtroom. And I said I hoped that there wasn't because of juror privacy, and at least there wasn't a camera there so you could see the jurors' faces, or if you knew who some of these jurors were, you wouldn't be able to recognize them or listen to what they were saying, because that would be a little uncomfortable, a little unfair, because while a defendant's life may be in the public eye, while a civil plaintiff who chooses to file a lawsuit and a civil defendant who's getting sued, their life could be in the public eye. Jurors, on the other hand, are just doing their civic duty and should not be put in the public like this. And I think an audio feed so far has been okay, but most of the questions from the judge are general, non-specific, non-personal, and a little more vague, not getting into the nitty-gritty, the personal details, experiences, and biases that could affect them in this case. And we'll get into what some of those may be if and when the lawyers ask questions, because somebody told me the lawyers aren't asking questions in this case, just the judge. I don't think that's correct, because I think the judge has said the lawyers will follow up with questions later, but the judge does ask at the end of each group's questioning, will there be any more voir dire questions submitted by the lawyers? And the lawyers say no. And the reason for that is lawyers can submit questions to the judges, especially in cases like this, that they want them to ask during this general qualification process, which is what's happening today and a little bit of tomorrow. Generally finding out if these jurors are qualified to be jurors or if there's something easy that we can strike them and move on as to not waste time. And by not wasting time, meaning you're asking these questions about how this experience may or may not have affected you or what experience you have like this, when in reality, you know three of the witnesses and that's going to cause you not to be unbiased to come and sit as a juror in this case. So we know that you're not going to be a good juror in this case. We don't need to waste time asking you any of the other questions. That is the purpose of today's questions and tomorrow morning's questions. All right. So if the judge was the only one asking the questions and the lawyers weren't, this process would go much quicker. I believe the lawyers are going to ask questions, and I think there's no way this thing gets done tomorrow. They said between 2 days and 5 days for jury selection. I think it's at least going to take 3 or 4 days, maybe even 5 total, to get this jury picked. They also said that they are going to pick 18 jurors, so 12 jurors and 6 alternates. Now, we don't know how alternates are picked. And I think just about every trial I've had, the last 2, the last 3, the last 6 would be the alternates. But we've seen names picked out of a hat, spinning, and the defendant pulling names of which jurors are going to be the alternates. So we'll see what the process here is in this judge, with this courtroom, in this jurisdiction, how he's going to determine the alternates. It is not necessarily the last 6 jurors. So keep that in mind. Because many times it is, but some courtrooms don't do it that way. All right. So what kinds of questions does the judge ask in this initial portion of seeing who a qualified juror would be? Well, we start with hardships. And you'll hear, every judge does not explain hardships the same way, but this judge goes through line by line, section by section, to all the different hardships. Physical or mental disabilities, focus issues, back pain that may not allow you to sit through the trial. And you can see the people that really want to get out of this obligation will jump at any chance, and usually they jump at their first chance. So we heard plenty of people in group 1 and throughout the day that had physical ailments and reasons they could not sit for a multi-week trial, which is legitimate, and they were excused almost immediately. Then we saw caretakers of the elderly, whether it's a parent or a loved one. Caretakers of small children, the only person that could take care of this child. You can't get babysitters for multi-weeks. It would just be too difficult. And then there were hardships based on work. You're self-employed. You're the only employee. You're the only person that could handle whatever it is that your job is. You won't have any income over these 3 weeks. You won't be able to pay rent. Those types of hardships were also excluded. And of course, some people were allowed and excused. But others were not. And some, the judge said, the lawyers may have further questions for you. That doesn't fit into the automatic disqualification, basically, for hardship. And, oh, of course, we got some prepaid vacations. That's a favorite one of a lot of jurors. You know, I paid for a vacation next week. It's non-refundable. So usually they'll be allowed off. And then some are just not available for a multi-week trial, but they'd be available for a couple days or a couple weeks, and they got transferred to another courtroom or another case or for another time to report for jury duty, but they are not the correct jurors for this case. And that's what we're trying to do. Pick the right jurors for this case. But then we got to a little bit more specific questions. And before we get to those, let's answer a few questions here. Jackie Jax is a new member. Welcome to the crew, along with Ashley Sissel. Rakita Law brought me here. I hope you guys cover another trial together. Gigi, I'm sure I'll end up on his channel. He may even be streaming this trial, and I'm going to try to pop on some of the other channels that are streaming for 30 minutes here or an hour there when I have time. I'm not able to stream the entire trial. In case you are new here, I am a real lawyer, even though it doesn't look like it tonight. I'm at my house in my comfy clothes, and I may even put my hair up in a man bun before the video is over. Personal injury, civil trial lawyer, also do some criminal work, did a lot more back in the day, have a firm in the Tampa Bay area. So even though I don't look like a real lawyer, maybe tonight I am, and I'm still practicing, so I don't have the ability to stream all day, but a lot of people do. JD brought you here, Caroline and many others, Justice Jane, first time here, found out about your channel from WFLA with JB on the Murdaugh trial. Well, I'm glad you're here. Hit that subscribe button because we're going to be doing a lot on Murdaugh. And I have a feeling that won't be my last appearance with JB talking about this case. John, politely, the audio only is complete nonsense for the actual trial. I feel like nobody could actually decide anything without seeing videos. The public needs to see everything. Happy disagree. So, John, I think that they are going to have video for the rest of the trial, just not the jury selection portion. I could be wrong about that, but I will say it's hard to follow jury selection when you're sitting in the room as a lawyer. You have multiple people working on this. It can also be hard to even hear some of the jurors' answers with the audio. So I agree with you. We're not getting 100% of the information with just this audio only. We'll see if it's any different. The judge has a microphone. My guess is the lawyers, when they're asking questions, will have a microphone. Maybe they'll pass a microphone around to the jurors. That's happened in some bigger courtrooms when I've picked juries before. We'll see if that happens. But I think this is just for the jury selection to protect the jurors and the people that are excused, because I don't think people quite understand how personal and invasive some of these questions can really get about what potential criminal charges you've had against you or your family or been the victims of some heinous crimes. And the world doesn't need to see that, in my opinion. Jackie, you make legal alphabet soup understandable. Much love. Thank you, Jackie. Sarah Bellum, please let the guest be Whitney. Well, I'll give you another hint. The guest is in the house with me and going to join by sitting in a chair right next to me. So that should give you some more of a hint. Jeannie Nash, thank you for the super sticker. Don Jamtal, what's up? Adriana, my grandma went in for jury duty only to find out it was her second cousin who committed murder, allegedly. Maybe they were convicted. She was released right away, obviously. And we'll talk a little bit about that because that was one of the questions the judge asked today. Stephanie Coker, do self-employed people ever get chosen for jury duty? Seems like it could leave out a demographic or segment of potentially good jurors. This is a great point. And a lot of potentially great jurors don't end up on a lot of juries, depending on the phase of life, right? A lot of times it's retired people, unemployed people, stay-at-home moms whose kids are in school and they have somebody that could pick them up, or stay-at-home dads, I should say, either, that have somebody to take them to school or pick them up. Unless they don't in that phase of life, usually they'll say, I can't because of the kids, but maybe after the kids are out of the house, high school, driving, whatever it may be. So there are a lot of potential people that never end up on jurors. Sometimes you'll have like cops, firefighters, nurses who work like 24 on, 24 off, or could get Kelly days and stuff like that. But I will say it's not never, I hate double negatives, but it's not never when talking about self-employed people. Sometimes there are one-day trials or two-day trials or three-day trials where that is not good enough to get you off this jury. But if we're talking 3 weeks or 8 weeks, we're not going to crush your career or not make you pay rent to sit on a jury, even though it is a very important part of the question. I mean, of the process. Emmy Headstone, thanks for answering my many questions on Insta. I try to answer as many as I can, right? We get a lot. I answer a lot. Some that take more explanation, I like to wait and do by video. Brandy, love your face, Peter. Thanks for being unbiased on every single case I've heard. Such a pleasure watching you. Thank you so much. And there will be more of that, of course, on this case. Lisa Boris, please say hello to my mom, Sue. She's watching. Hello, Sue. Marty, just want to say hi to you, Peter. Well, hello. Hello, Marty. And welcome to the stream. Tori, I've missed many lives as being a teacher gets in the way. I'm pumped to be here. Love the family and miss being a part of the community. Any word on Hoag? Been praying. He is tweeting. So I think things are going well. And he did DM me. So things are going well comparatively to how they were. But I am very excited you're here. And it seems like you'll be able to join us for these nightly lives this week. Adriana, he admitted he did it. So not allegedly. There you go. Hey, good. Good job by you. Knowing when to say he did it. Leona Edie, thanks for the super sticker. And Azam is here. I love your nightly recap, but I won't be able to join in since it's going to be my school day. Thanks for doing this, Peter. You better be in the rewatch crew, Azam. I want to see you in the comments, and you can come in and hit that like button. All right. So here we go. Specific questions the judge asked. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about why he asked them. Let's talk about what information he got. He announces the case, announces the charges. And it's important that he does both because anybody that potentially may know Alec Murdoch shouldn't probably sit as a juror on this case unless they can remain unbiased, which he continued to ask. And that's a tough question because jurors want to always say yes to that. Unless they want to get off the jury, of course, they say no. But that's tough with how you can know certain information and remain unbiased. But then he asks the chart, or then he announces the charges because a follow-up question later is any religious or moral beliefs that you have that don't allow you to sit in judgment of someone else. And while that can be true regardless of the charges, it's important that they also know this is a murder case. And there were a few people that did have religious objections that were excused. But the most important question, have you heard anything about this case? And the answer to this was yes, by a huge amount of jurors. And this lets us know why they didn't just have one group of jurors. They didn't just have two groups of jurors. They didn't just have three. I believe they have four or five groups of jurors they are bringing to the courthouse to do this initial inquiry, to come up with a group of qualified jurors that the lawyers will question to pick the 18 jurors from. So many of them have heard about the case. And I heard different sources, internet, friends and family, social media, news, coworkers, local news, word of mouth, newspapers, documentaries, specifically even mentioning Dateline's documentary. Every which way you could have possibly heard about this case, with the hundreds of people that came through here, they've heard about it. Some of them said, absolutely not. I could not be fair and unbiased, which I think could be very honest, could be people's way of getting out of jury duty, whatever it may be. You do not want jurors like that on this case, regardless of what you think about Alec Murdoch, regardless of what you think about murder, regardless of what you think about the system. If you are already starting with one side ahead of the other, you cannot be a qualified juror, as they say, for this case. Now, there may be something else in your background that also disqualifies you, but this is definitely number one. And most people that said they couldn't, I think everybody that said they couldn't be fair and unbiased after the information that they have heard was allowed to leave. Have you formed opinions based on this? And could you put aside whatever those opinions are and be fair and unbiased? Those are the kind of phrases used by the judge and sometimes by lawyers in these cases. What do you all think about that? Because we've talked a lot about how you all are potential jurors. You're a cross-section of society, even worldwide. It's a very diverse chat with different backgrounds, different thoughts. We disagree. We discuss stuff respectfully here. We like differences of opinion. We like disagreements and discussions where we can learn stuff from each other. What do you think about phrases like, well, I know you think and feel very strongly about something. Could you put that aside? Do you think the answer could ever truthfully be yes to that? Just let me know what you think. All right. Some said I could put it aside. Others said I could not. More questions. Have you expressed opinions to anyone else in your life about this case? And would those opinions sway you one way or the other? Has anybody expressed opinions to you? Then he read the defendant's name again and the victim's names. Anybody connected to them or know them? There was a lot fewer people that knew the Murdoch family name or were associated with the law firm than I would have expected. Now, there were plenty of people and more than most defendants or even attorneys that you would see come across these potential jurors, but not as many as I was expecting for this small community. And they said some other things throughout the process that led me to believe that maybe the lawyers in Alec Murdaugh looked at this group of jurors. We get the juror names ahead of time most of the time, and I'm sure they did here. You can do certain research on them, look up certain things about them. But Murdoch or the prosecutors or the defense attorneys could look and be like, this is my cousin, like somebody said, cross her off. This is my sister. This is my aunt. This person was a paralegal for me. They probably could have done that for some of the very close members that are connected to people that are intricately involved in this case. So a lot of people are saying, yes, I think I could. No, I think I couldn't. People could always be influenced. I'm a scientist. It's my job. That's interesting. Ride on, Josephine, new to the community. Welcome. I've already thought he's guilty. However, I would be open to hearing all the evidence. Could change my mind. So here's the issue with this, Carstow. He is supposed to be presumed innocent right now until the state changes your mind. The defense does not have a burden to change your mind. And the judge was getting at this a lot today, thinking, does one side start out ahead of the other side? And that's what they're asking. It's kind of what Carstow said. I think he's guilty, but you could change my mind. That wouldn't be a qualified juror coming into this case. But honest jurors like Carstow are doing their job appropriately, and they will be picked for a case that they are probably more appropriate for, even if it's not this one. All right. Then they listed the six or seven lawyers on the prosecution side, the couple lawyers on the defense side. Do you know any of them? A few people did. Any law enforcement with this prosecutor's office or any of the prosecutor's offices in the area, any of the defense attorney firms, you ever been clients? There were some people that were clients of them. And then he listed every single witness in the case, every single group of people. And it was wild to me that there weren't more jurors who knew some of the, I don't know, 50 plus witnesses that he listed every single time. Joe Smith, John Jones, Jake Jimmy. It's like every single person, he would read all of these names. And there were very few people that knew some of the witnesses. Now, there was one guy that knew about 12 of the witnesses and he listed off all their names. I thought that was interesting. Then they asked if you have any connection to law enforcement. Brothers, sisters, aunt, cousin, anybody in law enforcement. There were a few. And then that question usually, you know, does that make you biased in this case? Or do you think you could still be a fair juror? Usually they'll say yes to that. Usually just because my aunt is a cop doesn't mean I'm going to think everybody's guilty, right? Now, some defense attorneys will strike anybody with law enforcement connections. Some won't. It really depends. And it depends on the case, right? Especially a case like this where you want to explain expert testimony and blood splatter. Maybe you want some of those people to talk about how this was a shoddy investigation. This was a rushed investigation. That is part of Murdoch's argument in this case. So maybe you want a law enforcement connection so they can see how bad this was. It really depends on the case. Jury selection is not a one size fits all deal. All right. So any other reason that I haven't mentioned that would cause you a hardship or make you not a good juror for this case or make you be unfair or biased? And almost every group, there were no answers there. There was one or two on the last group, I think. But most people, if you ask a vague question like that, unless they really want to get off this jury, and most of those people are already going to be gone because he literally listed out the definition of hardships. So if you really wanted to get out, you would find a hardship you fit into. It's not like they go and check your medical records if you tell them, you know, I have a herniation in my lower back and I can't sit for this long. But just as a little aside, and you can listen to more tomorrow and see what the lawyers do, very vague questions that are not pointed, usually people won't speak up in jury selection and you won't get the information you're after as a lawyer. Now, the judge has a little bit of a different role in jury selection than lawyers do. So I already mentioned how when they ask the defense or prosecution any more questions for voir dire, that's because they can submit them beforehand. It does not necessarily mean the lawyers won't ask questions, but it is possible. In South Carolina, it says the lawyers may ask questions, meaning the judge can probably say no. I think in this case, they are going to ask questions. So after they go through hundreds of people, the judge announces that we have one more group coming tomorrow that we're going to do the same thing with. So these same exact questions are going to be asked. The same exact generic, are you married or single? What's your job? Are you unemployed? Have you been a juror before? If so, did you get a verdict? Those types of generic questions were also asked before the judge got into his questions, which those are all going to be asked tomorrow. Then we're finally going to get a group of jurors that I believe the lawyers are going to ask questions to. And I think it may even have to be more than one group when we get there. It's hard for me to follow and tell without the camera on how many jurors are qualified out of each group. It could be seven for all I know, but it seems like it's more than that. So I think we may have more than one group of 30 or 50. On average cases, it's 35, 40 jurors, potential jurors that get pulled. On bigger cases, you can have three or four groups of that, 100 jurors. This, it seems like there's hundreds of jurors that they've pulled for this case, which frankly would be really nice because that's the way you get the best jury. You get rid of the people that don't want to be there, get rid of the people that are disqualified right off the bat. You dig into who can be the best jury on this, the best jurors on this case. You have plenty of strikes for the peremptory challenges, the cause challenges, the alternate strikes to get the best jury you possibly can. That's the most fair and unbiased jury, at least the least bad jury as far as both sides of lawyers think. The least biased jury against your client or your position. But that's not how it works in every case, and that's not how it works in everyday life. I think I've only had one case that's done. Actually, we've busted a panel before, and then they've had to bring up another panel, so they can do that. But actually planned to have more than one panel, I believe, was only one federal criminal trial. That was a four-week trial that I did with my dad. It was the only one I can remember them actually bringing more than one group of jurors for us to try the case. So the vast majority of trials, especially civil trials, they will limit the number of jurors. They will also limit how long you can do jury selection for. So this is going to take 2 to 5 days, right? Most of the time, they want to limit us to less than one day. They want to limit us to 1.5 or 3 hours per side. During COVID, it was 30 or 45 minutes sometimes, which is totally unfair. Not a fair trial, in my opinion. And once COVID was gone, I had to continuously fight with multiple judges saying, we are not agreeing to that, judge. If you force me to, I'll obviously follow your rules. You will have to cut me off because I'm not going to stop asking questions. I have to protect it for appeal. I'm going to have more questions in 30 minutes. You can't get to know 35 people in 30 minutes. I mean, just look at how long this took. So a slower process with more jurors is better, but it's not necessarily feasible or possible or even plausible in most cases, which brings me to a question I want a lot of you to think about and answer in the comments and answer in the chat. Do you think it's fair that a case like this gets so many more jurors and he gets the fairest shot at a trial? Yet if your name is Jim Jones and you have the public defender, you might not get the same thing. Now, I think there are some reasons for it, right? His lawyers are pressing them, making sure his constitutional rights are protected. And this is a well-known case. It's a lot harder for him to find an unbiased jury than Jim Jones. Even if Jim Jones was accused of as heinous as crimes as Alec Murdoch, people don't come in usually hating Jim Jones. Everybody that's charged with murder and tried with murder, I think most jurors come in like, that guy, how'd you get over there in that seat? I could never imagine myself getting in that chair. If it's battery, if it's smoking pot, if it's a civil case, a car accident, you could probably picture yourself as being a plaintiff or a defendant or whatever it may be, a victim in a case of a car accident. You can understand that. But most of the time, not murder. So most criminal defendants accused of this type of crime, they come in with, you know, a little bit of a mountain to climb. But when you're Alec Murdoch and you have all this other mountain of problems, it is a lot harder for him to find an impartial jury. So I want to know what you think, if you really think that that is fair, how this process is working. Okay, let's get to some more questions before I bring in our special guest. Kristen Dewey, thanks for answering my question with JB earlier today. You're awesome. Hugs from Toledo, Ohio. Tons of family and friends in Ohio. Shelly Coleman, thank you for joining the membership crew. Ashley Harris, some guy that was chosen for my jury got to the very end and then threw a fit because he was chosen and tried making up excuses as to why he couldn't serve. It was crazy. You'd be shocked that we hear, sometimes we know people are lying or trying to get out and the judge will make them sit there throughout the entire process and not let them out till the end of the day, just as kind of like punishment. But yeah, it's sad. I mean, it's important. And listen, Whitney is the special guest. She had jury duty today. That's why I was home doing some of the videos because my kids' school had a pipe burst. So my kids were home from school. It was kind of a wild day. So I ended up staying home with them and working from home. So it wouldn't have been ideal if she was picked for this week-long trial. But she answered all the questions, went through the process. Now, listen, it's pretty tough to get picked if your lawyer represents exclusively one side of the exact trial that you could be picked from or for. But she went there. She did her duty. She didn't try to get out. She was there the whole day and eventually released at the very end because she wasn't picked. And we'll get into some of the specifics of what it was like for her. But you got to do your duty. And if you get picked, you would want somebody like you to do the same thing. And I tell that to people all the time that don't want to show up. Well, if you were sitting in that chair, would you not want someone like you to be there? If everybody like you didn't show up, wouldn't be great for you. Tara, I was in jury selection in North Dakota when I was 18 and Los Angeles. Wildly different experiences, I bet. Golden Girl. Did they ask if you are a follower of the lawyer you know? If so, you know too much. Bye. But you know how to be fair and unbiased and balanced and listen to both sides. John O'Rourke, I tried 3 times today to listen in. So difficult without video. I really think it's a mistake will be made if this is only an audio trial. Potential jurors thought. I agree with you. I hope the rest is, there is audio or video in there, but this does give us a little peek into what the Vallo Daybell trial is going to be like. And it's not the same thing with audio only. Dana is a new member. Golden Girl. I'd be like, if this means I can't watch Lawyer You Know every night, I'm out. Yeah, that's probably true. You probably shouldn't be watching this if you were on the jury there. Tori, how will we do this trial if it's only audio? Will you still try to follow with the family? I will just tell you, whether it's audio or video, I will still try to follow this trial and give you recaps like I am today. You don't have to listen to the whole jury selection. I did. And I'm going to listen to as much of it tomorrow. I can't promise you I picked up every word, because you know I like to listen to it sped up and some of the jurors' voices were a little bit low, but I'll be covering it as long as you guys want to. And you can let me know if you're interested in going to follow this case and want me to continue to follow it by hitting that like button and subscribing and letting me know if you're new with the Murdoch case. Debbie, do you have a set list of questions? And then do you get more specific with questions about the case? That's a great question, Debbie. So I have like an outline of things I want to hit. I want to see what other jurors have been in similar situations to my client. I want to see what jurors think there should be a cap on damages, where no matter how hurt somebody is, I don't think anything's worth $100,000, or I don't think anything's worth $1,000,000. I'll never make $1,000,000 in my life, so I'm not giving that person $1,000,000. I want to know those people because they are going against the law in Florida. We do not have caps on damages. We don't have caps on pain and suffering, emotional distress. We can do another stream on that. But there are some specific things I want to get to. But then, yes, I do talk about specific things in the case, whether it's the kind of treatment my client had, whether it's the kind of job they had, whether it's kind of injuries they had, whether what they're looking at long-term, kind of family, whatever it may be. If they're an eggshell plaintiff with a certain kind of disability coming into it. So yes, there are some very specifics in the case, but there's always an outline you want to hit to make sure you get the people on the jury that are going to follow the law. Be kind. I think after watching with you and other YouTube lawyers, I could put things aside. Thanks to the way you all report and discuss things. I'm older also, and my perspective is quite different from when I was younger. I think that's really all we're looking for. We're not asking for somebody to come in with no experiences, right? Hopefully you've never read, saw, listened to, or thought about anything in your life, and then you'll be a perfect juror for this case because you have no experience and no biases. No, I just mean, if your brother got in a car accident and got sued by somebody and his insurance company paid them, that you're not going to hold that against my client. If you think your brother's person that he hit filed a frivolous claim, fine. But can you just listen to my client's story and my client's facts and let me know if you think my client filed a frivolous claim? That's what we're really asking about, is realizing that your experience is different. The facts in that case are different. Can you totally put that aside and just listen to the facts of this case and determine what you think about that? That's really what we're asking for. Don J. Hey, Peter, do you think most lawyers who commit fraud, they think they can get away with it and they get caught up in greed and making as much money as they can? Do you know any lawyers who are all about becoming rich? Do I know any lawyers that are all, the list would be shorter if it was lawyers that were not all about becoming rich, but most of the ones that I know do it legitimately. But there are some that don't, and Murdoch's not the only one we've done videos about. We've done videos about Girardi, who also stole from his clients and was a high powered, had more money than most people in the world will ever have, but it still wasn't enough. And that's the point. I think it was Rockefeller that they asked how much is enough. And he said just a little bit more, right? And a lot of times I think it gets like that. Some people, it's drugs or gambling or things like that. other people, they just get so big that no matter how much money they make, they can't afford their house or their lifestyle or their car or whatever it is. And it leads them into bad decisions. And I think it hits lawyers hard because I cannot tell you how many times clients say, whatever you think is best, whatever you think is fair, what do you think I should do with the money? And that's how you end up like Murdoch saying, oh, invest it with this company, AM Enterprises. Has nothing to do with me, because clients usually trust us, especially after we just got them a big win or we were just really successful in their cases, which in PI cases, most of them are wins. And the client will trust you to do what you can. And if you have no moral compass, eventually you cross over that line and you realize, oh, wow, nothing happened. I made an extra $500K on this case. Maybe I'll try it again on the next one. That's how it happens usually. And it's really sad to see. Stacy, thank you for the super sticker. Carsto, what influence do the lawyers have on who gets picked for the jury? So they can ask, so they have preemptory strikes where they can strike someone for any non-discriminatory reason, not based on race, religion, creed, protected classes. And then they have cause challenges where these would all be cause challenges, meaning like they could not be a fair and impartial juror. Now, what's interesting about cause challenges is we know the law as lawyers, and there are certain things, like I just said, if jurors say I'll put a cap on emotional distress damages, on pain and suffering, I'll put a cap all day. It can never get over $1 million. That is a cause challenge. So I don't have to use one of my limited peremptory challenges, but I know the questions to ask so the jurors that feel that way will give us that answer so I can strike them. If I don't ask the question and they never give the answer, they're no longer a cause challenged juror. So lawyers have to know the law and prepare the questions to figure out who is actually not an appropriate juror for this case for cause, meaning means like just guaranteed, like they are just out. Preemptive can be questioned. And then we argue sometimes about some of the shaky cause challenges. Like, I think this one should be for cause. They think it shouldn't be. And we argue the law and the judge makes the decision. So the lawyers can have a huge effect on who's picked. They can't handpick. They don't say, okay, I want juror number 6 on my jury. Usually it's, you start with the first 12 or 18 in this case, and then you say, okay, these are the ones I don't want out of that 12. Okay, they're struck. And then we bring in 3 more and we have the people that are in the box now. Usually that's the way it's done. Jeepers is a new member, along with Crystal. Azam, Peter, who prepared these questions? Is this a set of questions the same in every jury selection session for a criminal case? So it's a combination, Azam. It's a good question. There are certain standard questions that the judge is asking, that judges ask in every case. Then there are questions that the lawyers submit to the judge. The judge then picks some of them and asks some of them, but not others. So it's a combination of questions from each lawyer and the standard questions that the judge likes to read in all of his trials. Being on the jury is one of my favorite life experiences. So interesting. Appreciate you, Peter. Thank you, Carrie. That's great to hear. Anna. EDB read the order from the court. Court TV will be providing the pool feed. It's only on audio for jury selection. The rest will be televised. Thank you, Anna. It's probably Anna, not Anna. I don't know. Katrina, what are your thoughts about the missing t-shirt? I don't think it's missing. I think it just cannot be tested anymore. It could be missing, and I could just have got that wrong, but I thought during the argument that they had the t-shirt, it just couldn't be tested anymore because of the way the prosecution did their testing. Beth, I got asked a question a couple weeks ago in a jury pool. Do you have any moral religious reason you couldn't pass judgment on someone? It was a civil case. They asked that question in this case, and it's a legitimate question, and it can get you struck for cause if your answer is yes. It's a legitimate objection people have. Tori, when Peter gets so big on YouTube, he'll forget about his OGs. Come on, Tori. That ain't going to happen. Stacy Sutton. Thank you for the super sticker. All right, Whit, you ready? All right, here we go. The final part of our video. Let me know in the comments if you guys can hear okay. My beautiful wife is joining us, obsessed for Disneyland. Hello. It's a good time. Hello.
Hi.
Can everybody hear her? I'm going to try to put the mic in the middle of us here. All right, so we are going to talk about your jury selection process. This is Whitney, my wife, for anybody that's new or hasn't been here before. She's been on a couple of times. Let me know if you can't hear us, like I said, because we're standing or sitting in a little different positions than we usually are. But so you were part of the jury selection process today, right?
Yes.
It was a civil case.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us about the process leading up to it. What did you have to do before jury selection day came up?
I had to fill out a questionnaire.
Okay.
With things like my name, my address. They wanted to know what my occupation was, if I was married, what your occupation was. And then they asked questions about like if I had ever been involved in a lawsuit, if anyone near me had been involved in a lawsuit or close to me in my immediate family, questions like that.
Okay. So just kind of generic questions. And then you also had to call the night before, right?
Yeah. They said you could call the night before and find out if they still needed you the next day.
And it was after 6 o'clock, right?
After 5
p.m. After 5 o'clock. Yeah. Okay. So after they were closed, mm-hmm. and was it an automated number that you called?
It was it was a recording.
And what did you do? Did you have to put in your jury number, your name? What did you do?
I just called the number and they list it off. So they give you a jury number on your form, mm-hmm. and they send it to you, and they list it off. They said like this number through this number, we're going to need you. This number through this number, we do not need you for your service tomorrow. And my number was in the we need you category.
So KMH mother. So she was on a Florida case today. And it was really interesting to hear her talk about it when she got home. How different, obviously I know because I've been in it a million times, but for a layperson, how different her jury selection process was today than what I watched in the Alec Murdaugh case. And I just thought it was a really great illustration for you all to hear how different it is for just Joe Schmo's case. Okay. So you get to the courthouse, mm-hmm. and what happens?
We go upstairs. They have us wait in like a waiting room. I think they're waiting for everyone to get there. They gave us a little card that had our juror number on it. And a optional like questionnaire. I think it was like a comment card or something.
Did you fill it out or no?
I didn't.
Okay. So some people do fill that out. Some people don't. Did you watch a video or anything like that?
We did not watch a video. We had
the whole day?
No, we never watched a video.
That's weird.
We had like a...
My dad used to be in it.
In the video?
Oh, no, he's in the criminal courthouse. He's in the criminal courthouse video that they played, not the civil courthouse.
No, but we didn't watch a video. We had like an orientation. Mm-hmm. Like someone brought us in and kind of like we took an oath. Mm-hmm. They did like an oath with us. And then they basically just said, this is what's expected of you. Be truthful. Answer all the questions. That kind of thing.
So there are some questions coming in that we'll go ahead and answer here. Could she be excluded because you're a lawyer? We will get to that one. How many people were there?
Ooh, I think there were like 100 people when we first got there.
But then what happened? Eventually they only picked some of you.
But then they called like 35 of us back and let everybody else go home.
And you were one of the 35.
I was one of the lucky 35.
And you don't know why?
I have no idea why. Do you know why?
No, usually it's random for the lawyers.
I would like to know why.
Ashley Harris, would you still do videos covering this case if Whitney got chosen for the trial? No. Mm-hmm. I literally told her, I was like, I kind of hope you do get picked, but if you don't, it'll be perfect content for tonight because we can really compare the differences in this case. And she was texting me like, hey, you know, I'm not going to be able to get the kids yet because I didn't get picked, but I told her not to tell me anything specific about what they were saying.
Don't tell me anything.
Yeah. I was like,
don't
just
say anything.
Yeah.
About
don't
the
tell
case.
Me anything. So we wouldn't have been talking about this at all.
I don't know
all.
Anything about the case, but okay.
Exactly. Okay. So you get there and eventually they pick 35 of you, but what did you do in the meantime?
Before they picked us, mm-hmm. I waited.
Did nothing, right?
I literally did nothing. I just sat and waited and waited.
And when did you actually get into the courtroom and see the lawyers and the judges?
Probably like an hour and a half.
So you just sat there and did nothing for an hour and a half. Okay. Yeah. And that's another part of the process. So here they had jurors report in the morning at different times. It was like 9:30, 12:30, 4:30. And then the next day they're going to have them report again. So when they get there, they just sit there for a long time. And a lot of people don't want to be late for jury duty. So they show up early and you just end up sitting there for a long time. And yes, she came home and the first thing Maverick said when I got home from the office was mom said it was boring. Because
he said, mom, were you bored? I said, yeah, some of it was pretty boring.
Okay. So you get in the courtroom and what happens?
We get in the courtroom and we wait some more. And then,
so it didn't start immediately when you got to the courtroom.
No.
Okay. So what happened? You get there and what happens?
We get in there, we sit down, the lawyers are there. The judge is not in there. The bailiff, like, seats us, like we have assigned seats. So they call our juror number and we go in and the bailiff tells us where to sit. And then once everyone is in there, the bailiff was like, when I call the judge in, I'm going to ask everyone to rise. You're going to want to stand up. And then he was like, okay, it's actually going to be a few minutes. It's going to be a minute. And so then he asked the lawyers to come with him. And so all the lawyers got up and walked out back. I don't know what's back there. It looks like secretive or something. It's some kind of door. And they all went back there, and then they were there for like half an hour.
So
and
again,
we sat longer for half an hour waiting.
And this hasn't happened yet in the Murdoch case, but once the lawyers start asking questions, you better believe that there are going to be breaks and stops. I mean, mm-hmm. think about the Daryl Brooks case, how many times they had to send the jury out. So the jury's sitting there, and she got a little picture of this today. And you guys get this when you watch the trials, except that you get to watch everything that's happening in the courtroom. There are so many breaks, so many stoppages, so many delays with the jury sitting back there. Like, she was like, what the heck are they doing? Why are they arguing about this? It seems so simple. I don't get it. Haven't you prepped for this before now? But she sits and waits more.
Yeah.
And then you went to lunch before anything even started, right?
The judge asked his questions.
Okay. So you got some general questions for the judge before lunch. Mm-hmm. Okay. What were those kinds of questions?
They were kind of like, he was going over the procedure, like the expectations of us, which mm-hmm. were fair and, you know, we need you to be fair and impartial. And he was really putting a lot of emphasis on answering truthfully to all of the questions that were asked by the lawyers and expressing how important it was that we give truthful answers, because they're really trying to figure out if we can be fair and impartial based on, you know, any of our predisposed beliefs or whatever that may be.
So how did you take all of that? What was going through your head? So just so everybody knows as well, I have done some of my questions for Whitney before on cases like, hey, how would you answer this? What mm-hmm. do you think about this? Does this sound like a jerk, or does this sound legit, or whatever? You know, practice some questions, because she's a lay person, not a lawyer. So she's heard some of this before. But generally speaking, when you're listening to a judge talk about this general stuff as a lay person sitting there waiting for this stuff to start, what do you think? Are you thinking about anything, or are you just waiting for it to get over?
I feel like I was just kind of like curious, interested in what they were going to ask, what they were going to ask me.
Okay.
I was interested in how it was going to go.
Okay. So the judge asks some generic questions. Did you answer any or stand up or talk at all while the judge was asking questions?
He asked us to raise our hands
when he said your name.
For certain things. He would say like, raise your hand, you know, if you know an attorney or a cop or something like mm-hmm. that. And so I would raise my hand for those things that applied to me. And then he would ask like, who in your family or whatever, who do you know? Those kind of questions. So I would answer those. And then what I also don't think I ever realized until he said this today, but he was talking about answering truthfully all these questions. And he said, if you don't answer or you don't speak up about something that is asked, that is also considered like you can get in trouble.
Yeah.
I was like, oh
yeah.
Okay.
We've seen in cases that's not necessarily always true, but it should be.
But I just thought that I was like, oh. And then he was like talking about, he's like, there could be legal repercussions. He was talking a lot about a mistrial, there being a mistrial.
And yeah. And nobody wants
that. Nightmare that would be. Yeah.
Okay. So that brings us to lunch then.
Yes.
So you had not heard from a lawyer prior to lunch.
Not one word from a lawyer. And he said, before we get into the lawyers, we'll take a lunch break. So we had an hour lunch break.
So before you really did anything, you had an hour lunch break. You were able to see the clients though, the defendant and the plaintiff?
I did.
And did you kind of like look at them, and regardless of what your thoughts of were then, were you kind of sizing up? Do I feel bad for this guy? What do I think about that guy or gal, whatever?
To be completely honest, and I don't know if this is, I should know this. I didn't know which was which.
Okay.
I didn't know which was the plaintiff and which was the defendant. Oh, I know, gosh. It's so terrible. Okay. Do they only sit on one side? Like, I honestly didn't know.
The plaintiff always sits closer to the jury.
I didn't know this.
Okay. Well, all right. That's fine. All right. That's fine.
Have you talked about this?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. So let's get to some more questions here. So in case anybody doesn't know what's going on, because I saw somebody said, who is this? This is Whitney, my wife. She had jury duty today. We're talking jury selection. She went through the entire process for a day, and it was very different than what we saw in the Alec Murdoch case. So we're getting some comparisons here, some compare and contrast, talking about how it's very different and whether or not we think that's fair in the way that it should be. Mo said, I had to call in every Sunday through Thursday to see if they needed me for the next day after 5 p.m. All days but Wednesday said jurors not needed. Then Wednesday said 1 through 70 needed, and there was no one needed Friday, I was $399. That's an interesting process.
Yeah, that is.
Kind of frustrating with work and stuff, but yeah. Did they take your cell phone or did they just tell you to turn it off?
They just told us to turn them off, yeah.
In federal court, they'll take your cell phone. Masai, Peter, can non-US citizens be picked? No.
Can they be called? They aren't.
It's based on like driver's license or IDs, yeah. Things like that. John O'Rourke, friendly thought, not interested if the public courtroom isn't welcome to the public. Interesting. Whitney, you are a legend dealing with us golfers. You are beautiful. Lawyer, you know, you are too lucky.
Oh,
thank you, John. Take Whitney out to a nice dinner with that super chat. Carly is a new member, as is Lynn. All right, so here we go. Let's get to this real quick. Kelly D said, could you be excluded because you're a lawyer? And Cheryl, I'm sure they know who Whitney is. Your last name is very well known. What do you think, Peter? And then there was another question. About like, did anybody say anything about Peter or my dad as well? My dad's been a lawyer for 40 years. So it's just as likely, more likely they know Tragos from his name than my name. So they could have thought you were his daughter or whatever.
Right.
So did anybody mention anything to you?
When I walked in, the bailiff was calling all of our names and our juror numbers. And when I walked in, he said, are you Tragos related to attorney Tragos? And I said, yes. And then I sat down. He didn't say anything else to me. He goes, I thought that last name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then
what you just say, somebody else that was in the courtroom, she said she saw Lip. That's Peter Tragos' wife. It was somebody kind of making the decision. So we'll just leave it there. So yes, there was a little bit of people knowing who she was, but she stayed there all day. And we don't know why she got struck at the end. And we'll talk about that kind of when you leave, not really knowing what happened. Whitney, you're an angel. Ha ha. Peter is hammering away at these questions. Thanks for coming on with us. Thanks, Sarah. Let me see if there was anything else. Cindy is a new member. Okay. So the lawyers come on after lunch. And what did you think kind of their presentations?
So the plaintiff's lawyer started.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he did a really good job. He was very likable, super charismatic, like very just friendly. I felt like he had a good presence. Like he was very likable.
And you felt like he asked questions that kind of let you know what the case was about, where he was trying to go. He was saying things without saying things. You kind of said, right?
I felt that way. I didn't know if it was because I have like listened to you prepare either, you know. I didn't know if other people felt that way. I felt like when he was asking questions, I was like, oh, I feel like I know where he's going with this, or like what he's looking for with this question.
And she would tell me some of the questions that he asked. And I would say, yes, that's exactly what he was trying to get at. And he talked about caps and not having caps on damages. And he talked about different things that he wanted to make sure people were going to be fair there. And there were questions that I ask in every jury selection is like, do you think that your verdict in this case is going to affect your insurance premium? Mm-hmm. Like if you give $1 million, you think, oh crap, now my State Farm premium is going to go up if they have State Farm. And if your answer is yes, and that's going to affect you and make you keep the numbers down, then you can't be a fair and unbiased juror. So it was questions like that. The way he was asking them, she was understanding the points he was trying to get across, which to me indicates he's a good communicator of what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
And then did you answer a few of the questions?
I raised my hand or answered questions if I was directly
Did he ask
asked.
You and did he say Ms. Tragos to any specific question?
He did. No, not specifically just to me, but he did a few questions where he asked every single person.
Okay.
He went like person to person, row to row.
Was there any other time where he picked out Ms. Jones? I have a question for you.
Yes.
Okay.
But they were usually like linked to something they had previously said. Like,
right.
Like you answered this.
But he didn't do that with you at all.
He didn't do that.
Okay.
With
so that makes me think that they knew you were struck from the beginning. So usually that's kind of what we do. We stay away from jurors that we know are struck from the beginning. Okay. So that's kind of funny to hear that he doesn't want to make it obvious, right? If we're going to go juror one, two, three, we don't want to skip over you and make it everybody be like, why did they not ask her a question?
Yeah. And I
you
don't, know,
so
now that I think about it, he didn't like ask me any follow-up questions.
Exactly. So like regardless.
Like at all. Like he would ask me if he was asking everyone when I would answer, he'd be like, okay, move on. Like
so
he wasn't.
If you were a nurse, they would have been like, oh, what kind of nurse? Right. Where do you work? Do you work here or there? Are you a teacher? Oh, your husband's retired. What's he retired from? If they don't follow up with you at all based on your questionnaire, that usually means you're not going to get picked. Not always, but usually means you're not going to get picked. So it seems like that's what was happening with you. So you heard from the plaintiff's attorney for the most part, right? He did the bulk.
Oh, yeah.
And then the defense attorney, what'd you think there?
It was very quick. he also asked everyone individually. He did ask me one follow-up. I told him, he asked what we like to do in our free time. I said, I like to read. And then he asked me what I like to read. And then that was it. That was all of his questioning. He said, because the other
question. Most of the time, the plaintiff's lawyers are even prosecutors in cases, a lot of times not so in criminal cases, but plaintiff's lawyers usually do the bulk. Defense lawyers usually go a little bit less. It's not an indication of one's better than the other or anything like that. It's just, that's kind of how the process goes.
And he was also really likable and nice. Yes. I just didn't have as much time with him.
Correct.
Like, I didn't.
And I think that's funny because we like that as plaintiff's lawyers, that you spend more time with us. If we're likable, if you hate us, right, then it's worse. You just spend a lot of time with us and you hate us.
And he asked if anybody didn't like him.
Right. The plaintiff's lawyer. Tina Crichton, I believe it's Crichton. She corrected me on one of the streams. Thanks for sharing your experience, Whitney. So awesome to meet Peter's better half. Absolutely. So you talk to them for a few hours and then you take another break.
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of waiting throughout the day, right?
Lots.
Then you come back in and they pick the jury.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're not on it.
I am not.
Okay. Do they tell you why?
No.
Okay. Do you wonder why?
I don't wonder why. I feel like I know why.
Okay.
I feel like you told me that's why. But I do wonder if I wasn't married to an attorney, if they would have picked me.
Do you want to know what the outcome of the case is? Like, are you interested in what happened?
I'm kind of invested.
Okay.
I kind of like wonder now, like, what were the facts? Yeah.
Could you imagine being a juror for 5 days and then being sent home as the alternate and not being able to see the end or hear what happens?
No.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd want to like get somebody's number and be like, text me, let me know what happened.
That's the worst. I do feel bad for the alternates that sit there the whole time. That's the only time I don't make eye contact like in my whole life. Cause I'm like, I feel so bad. The judge does tell them like, call if you want to know what happened or if you want the outcome in the case and we'll look it up. Dave posts all of the jury verdicts in Pinellas County. Okay. So I'll look up that case since I know who the lawyers are on it. And I will let you know what happened. Azam, Whitney's being cross-examined by Peter. Oh, come on. This is much nicer than a cross-examination. Come on. Okay. Any other, so overall thoughts of the process, what did you think?
I really genuinely, I know jury duty, I feel like it's like bad rap. It really does. But I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool being on the other side of it. Like, I've watched you prepare. I've like talked to you about jury selection. And so I feel like it was cool to sit on the other side and kind of get that perspective. I thought it was really crazy that in a pool of like 30 people, 35 people that they picked from this 100, everyone in that room was so vastly different. It was wild to me. Like, I just couldn't believe how many different perspectives. And I mean, just in 35 people, that was wild. That was really, really cool to see just how different everybody is.
And that's why I always talk about the chat on YouTube. First off, she also said there were some difficult responses that the attorney got. Okay. And I said, sometimes there are difficult responses on YouTube as well. And that's why I talked to you guys about how this has helped me. And also, I feel like the YouTube chat is a cross-section of a very diverse society, kind of like 35 people, everybody very different. Mm-hmm. Here, 3,600 people, a lot of different people with a lot of different experiences and a lot of different opinions, which is why I love to see people like Claire, thank you for the comment, come in, give their questions, give their comments, tell me what they think about things. I learned so much talking to you about it, talking to them about it. That's what's so fun.
It is. It's really cool. It's really cool.
Boricua, late but love the power couple. Oh. Take on this.
Like that.
Cerebellum, can Whitney come on again? Maybe the members only live and go over our top 10 recommended reading list from the past year. Think we can make that happen.
We could talk about books forever.
Yeah.
Like ad nauseum.
Yeah, we could do that on the members only for sure. I'm not sure how people will I'm not sure how people will react to this. Some people will like it. Some people probably won't, but you know, it is what it is. I thought it was really cool to compare and contrast the experiences. I'm going to answer a couple more questions and then I'm going to get to some of the big comparisons. Sue, what were the three motions that were submitted by the defense? I didn't hear them on audio. Did they just submit them to the judge? I did not see them at all. So I'm not sure what they were. Sandra Ramirez, have you read the defense's motion to block Tom Bevel blood spatter expert from testifying. Is it unusual to have an outside expert for the prosecution, especially given they have SLED crime labs? So Sandra, I didn't read the motion, but we did listen to the hearing. And it turns out there are some internal memos on the prosecution side that there are issues with this blood splatter evidence. And this expert, I believe, has been disqualified in other cases or has gotten it wrong in other cases. So the defense wanted to bring that up. It's very common, actually, that a motion like this would be filed. And it's not that uncommon that they would use an outside expert. But I'm interested to see what happens. I have not seen an answer from the judge on that. Janet, maybe you can get someone for a criminal case and get selected. My dad is a giant in that courthouse. So I don't think that would happen either. Iceman 2.0. Oh, I like that name. Whitney talks like Peter. That was wild. LOL. We've been together a long time. Long time. Almost half our lives. CMC, thanks for being here, Whitney, and sharing your experience. I'd love to see more of you here with us and the Lawyer You Know fam. We can make that happen. But she's like a gem. You know, you can't overuse it. You have to just bring it in special circumstances. So some of the major differences. One group, 35 people.
Yeah.
The judge asked questions for less than an hour.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this judge all day today asked questions and is going to ask more tomorrow. Wow. The lawyers, the entirety was less than 3 hours of questions for you. It could be 3 days in this case. And one of the most important things I asked you is, did the judge ask about hardships?
Oh, yeah.
And you said yes, but they were vague, right? He just said, did anybody have any hardships?
He said, is there anything that could potentially keep you from either
focusing?
Yes. And, yeah. Like physically being here or being fair and impartial.
So again, he didn't say, are you caring for an elderly person? Do you have small children? Because that would disqualify you. Do you have a disability that's not allowing you to be here? Are you self-employed? So you can't say, because that's a hardship that I would have to exclude you for, like the Alec Murdoch judge did. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, here in Pinellas County, as we say, with one set of jurors of 35, we don't want everybody to get out of here, because they will. They will try to get out of this. So if you tell them how they can get out, they will say, yep, I've got a disability. Yep, I care for my mom. Yep, I have small children. And they will hit every one of those exclusions, which is, again, why it's a little bit different when you have so many jurors to pick from, like Alec Murdoch does, versus in a case like this where they only have 35 and we don't want to bust this panel because they've already sent the rest home. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Penny Christopoulos. Ashley, members only chat with Whitney and John, spilling the tea. I don't want to set myself up for that.
John
O'Rourke, does the age of the judge matter, or could it matter possibly? Sure. Which judge you have definitely matters. Their experience. Were they a defense lawyer? Were they a plaintiff's lawyer? Were they a criminal lawyer now doing civil stuff? Were they a civil lawyer now doing criminal stuff? Were they a family law lawyer? Their experiences, their age, everything really matters, because the judge is the king or queen of their courtroom. And they can make a huge difference as to how things do. I'm in front of the judges that was on Whitney's trial a ton. Most of my cases are in front of him. And he handles things a certain way. He's a more senior judge, and he likes to do things the way he likes to do things, which is fine. He's pretty chill and pretty relaxed too.
The judge can't strike people, can he? Can the judge?
The judge can, but more importantly, the judge will make the call as to whether it is a for cause strike. Meaning, yes, there's no argument. That person can't be on this jury. They're disqualified. The preemptive strikes the lawyers make, and the judge can't necessarily overrule that unless they find that they were made based on a protected class. You know, they were made for a discriminatory reason. Eric, Peter, you and Natalie should bring in a random guest, do a prosecutor defense jury selection. That would be fun. Joe Figueroa, you two are awesome together. Do more together. We do everything together, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
But we will see if we can bring her on more in the future. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting just how different that process was, because I watched it or listened to it, I should say, for most of the day today on in the background, and you lived it.
It's funny.
Very different.
But it's funny it happened the same
day. Yes, very cool.
Coincidental.
But it's like, man, sometimes I think when people say it's all about money in the judicial system, sometimes it does feel like that, although this case could have potentially been a multi-million dollar case. Yeah. So you don't really know necessarily how much money is involved. All right. I think that's it. Anything else you want to add from your jury selection experience?
No, I mean, I do want to just say that I was very encouraged today to do my civic duty and to encourage others to do it. Because as I was sitting there, I was thinking, if it were me or someone that I love, like sitting in one of those seats, I would hope that the jurors that were there would be invested and interested and kind of realize the level of importance that they play in a trial. So I feel like that was cool to at least get to kind of hang and do that. And
awesome experience.
Yeah.
M. Watson, due to the gruesomeness of the evidence, can jurors be excused based on their mental health? Had a friend who was a juror and still having nightmares?
Oh, gosh,
yes. Yes. But usually they'll have to like kind of know that beforehand. And you know, based on the fact that it is a murder case, they may know that. All right. That's all we got for tonight. That's all we got time for. We'll talk more jury selection tomorrow. So if you have questions, get them in the comments, hit that like button on the way out. If you're new, make sure you subscribe, hit that reminder bell. So you're going to come back with us every night, as long as this trial is going on. One more question on the way out. Susan, I served on two criminal cases, murder and essay of a minor. Is there a time limit when you can be called again? Great show. So yes, that changes by jurisdiction. And I want to say today, they said if you had served on a jury for within the last 6 months in South Carolina, you could be excused. They said it today, and I just can't remember. I just can't remember.
Throwing out with excusals.
Yes, I know. They were just trying to let everybody go that had any reason that they should go. So yeah, it really did happen. So I appreciate everybody so much joining us. Whit, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was awesome. Love you.
It's fun.
All right.
Love you.
That's all we got. Hit that like button on the way out until tomorrow night. Actually, tomorrow during the day, I recorded a video today on Sarah Boone, the letter she wrote her lawyer. Is she setting up an appeal? Does she have legitimate gripes with this lawyer? Check that out tomorrow around noon-ish. Take a break for lunch if you're listening to this jury selection and watch that. But we'll be live again tomorrow night. Thanks, everybody that joined. We're out of here. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, here's what to do next. Give it a share, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and make sure you subscribe to the show in the listening app of your choice. Follow me on all social media platforms at Tragos Law, and join the Lawyer You Know YouTube channel and community where you can ask me questions live on all of these cases. If you've got an idea for a specific topic, or you have a personal legal question on an injury case, whether it's a car accident, trip and fall, wrongful death, or catastrophic injury case, please email me at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. All of these links I just mentioned are included in the show notes section of this episode. So until next time, I'm Peter Tragos.